Hello, my finest of friends. It's me, Richard Herring. Thank you for listening to my podcast. Really appreciate it. We're powered by Acast Plus. Please do tell your friends to listen. There's some really great podcasts. Not all of them are the most famous names, but I think you'll agree if you listen that they're all really good chats. And I'm still on tour with Can I Have My Ball Back? It's been going really well. Thank you to everyone who's come so far. I'm really pleased with the show. It's getting better every time. Right, Bollocks being a lot of fun. I think you're going to like meeting him. This week I will be in Doncaster on Wednesday, Scarborough on Thursday. That one's selling pretty well. Scarborough was the lowest seller of last time I toured stand-up, but nearly sold out. Different venue. And Friday I'm at Stockton Arts Centre. Tickets available for all of those. And then there's a little hiatus and I'm back in London in the Bloomsbury on the 7th of June and the Leicester Square Theatre on the 9th of June. Be terrific if you're in London, if you could come and see one of those shows. They both need a bit of a boost with ticket sales and there may be reviewers in. So if you like these podcasts at all and would like to give me anything in return and you live in London, coming to one of those two gigs, Bloomsbury, 7th of June, Leicester Square Theatre, 9th of June, would be an enormous boost. But go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour to find out all the tour dates. Would love to see you there. And, you know, it doesn't matter how many people are in. It's all about the fun we have. And so far, it's been lots of fun and great to meet you afterwards. Happy to sign your cock if that's what you're after. Anyway, let's sit back, relax, and enjoy another wonderful podcast.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, Nottingham. Welcome to the Playhouse. Please welcome a man who wants you to leave behind your humdrum lives. It's Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Hello. Oh, lovely to be back at the Playhouse. What a fantastic theatre. I don't want to bang on about the Tales of Robin Hood again all the time, but I'm going to. Still furiously angry about it. Got to leave behind your humdrum lives. Welcome to Robin Hood and Little John Supersede Tesco Podcast. I know the Tesco. They're turning Tesco into a gym, right? Have I got that right? The Tales of Robin. That's what Tales of Robin Hood became a Tesco. No, and then Tesco's becoming a gym is the last I heard. £2 million gym. I hope at least they're going to be, you know, having to fight each other on little poles and stuff to get... Oh, it's going to be a theme. Make it themed. It's all you've got, Nottingham. Keep the theme. Though I was hanging around with some unemployed actors from the Tales of Robin Hood the other day. They all still sit around in their costumes. They're ready to go just in case it opens up again. They call it Ralastapa. You know, Robin Hood is all you've got. It's from York. And he didn't exist. So that's all you've got. Well done for that. It is. It's always a pleasure to be in Nottingham. I've been looking up some facts about Nottingham. I'm sure I knew this before, but of course, Nottingham was originally called Snottingham, and that is not even a joke. That's true. It's named after a man called Snot. It means town of snot. Oh, he's called Snottingas. And it's good to see the inhabitants of Nottingham keeping that going for so many centuries. Boots, the chemist, was founded in Nottingham. Do you know that? By not by Ian Boot, unfortunately, by Jesse Boot. The most popular product they had in their first time when Boots was opened was Boots No Name Ointment. That is not something I want to buy. I have to say that's Jesse Boot was out the back making that, wasn't he? You have to wait a little while. Why has it got no name, Jesse? Let's see if I've got any other Nottingham facts for you. Ken Dodd's first performance ever was at the Empire Theatre in 1954. It ended in 1958. That's a proper joke! That's a proper joke! I wrote a proper joke for you. I'll save some up for next week's audience, who I think are going to be better than you. Just judge. I've got nothing with this, really, but both Sue Pollard and Torville and Dean are all from Nottingham, which is very exciting. But it means that there might be an alternate universe somewhere where Christopher Dean and Sue Pollard are skating together. And Jane Torville is in Heidi High. I would love to see... I mean, I don't think she'll be very good in Heidi High, but I think Dean and Pollard... I'm not sure they'd win any gold medals. It would be a fantastic thing. Good. I'm just interested that, you know, I know you've got your big oak, the major oak in Sherwood Forest. It's 10 metres girth, if you know that. And that's the only time I've ever seen the word girth used for anything except a penis. So that's it's good to see. Right, let's crack on. We've got a fantastic guest for you this week. He's probably best known for his appearances on Songs of Praise. That's why we're here tonight to see him. Will you please welcome the incredible Lloyd Griffith, ladies and gentlemen. It's Lloyd Griffith. Here he is. Lovely to see you. Come in, sit down. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Ah, it's very good. It's good to be here. It looks nice, isn't it, in Nottingham?
It's lovely. Yeah. I mean, I can't see it, but they smell delectable.
They're very nice. Tell us about Songs of Praise.
Which appearance?
I know, you've been on many times.
Four times. Yeah. So the first one, I was a child.
Yeah.
And then the second one, second and third time, I was, a teenager?
Yeah.
And then the fourth time, adult.
Okay.
And the fourth time, being interviewed by Alla Jones.
Wow.
Off of the Snowman fame, which actually wasn't him, apparently.
It wasn't him in the actual thing.
No, it wasn't him in the actual thing.
But then he did the record because the other guy's voice broke.
Yeah, and I will never slag him off because I've recently just got a job on Classic FM.
Okay.
So, absolutely lovely bloke, and keep that in the podcast.
So the reason you're in Songs of Praise is because you're a chorister.
Chorister, yeah.
First and foremost, before anything else.
Yeah, before anything else. I was a choir boy in Grimsby, which, again, not a sentence many people say. I was a choir boy in Grimsby in the late 80s. And I just loved it and just didn't want to do anything else other than be a choir boy, really.
Yeah.
Even when my voice broke. I was like, how do we carry it on? A lot of sellotape, apparently. Because your balls drop.
Yeah.
Okay, you got it. Fair enough.
They got it. Well, you know, and you were a choral singer then after being
yeah.
it. So that was your...
Yeah, so what? I wasn't really good at anything else other than being a bit of a dick and singing. And when my voice broke, I was like, right, I'm going to carry on being a singer. And again, in Grimsby, there was only really one choir that you could be a part of, and so I just kept on doing that. And I went to university, and like, university is a weird one, isn't it? Because it's where you can basically have like a rebirth, a renaissance, where you can just be whoever you want to be. And I just carried on being this weird fucking choir boy. And so I went to the University of Exeter, which is, I think, the furthest university away from Grimsby, which was an absolute nightmare because I didn't drive. And I used to have to change in Sheffield and then go all the way down to Exeter. And then I remember in Freshers Week, there was this really cool guy that like Johnny Bravo called Ken that came in. I'd never seen anyone called Ken before. And he came in with a pack of Miller under his arm and like a really lovely white T-shirt, stonewashed jeans and cowboy boots. And he was like, hi, I'm Ken, your drinking buddy for the next 3 years. So I was like, oh, hi, how are you doing? He's like, should we go to the pub? I was like, oh, I'd love to. I've got to go to church. And he's like, I'll see you later. I was like, oh, maybe I should have had a bit of a renaissance here. But I just carried on doing it. But I did also at the same time, you know, get drunk 8 times a week. I remember Freshers Week on the Thursday, singing Evensong at Exeter Cathedral, doing the Psalms and falling asleep, stood up while singing the Psalms. And I was like, I think I'm going to enjoy this life. And so I've just carried on doing it, and I got a degree in music, and I had sex when I was 26. Thank you. First time you properly left.
It's funny because it's a No. Your favourite composer?
Yeah, go on.
Thomas Tallis?
Yeah, fucking hell, that's good research, isn't it?
I don't know. I know his name. I don't know any of his stuff.
You don't know? What?
I don't know who Thomas Tallis is.
Shut up. Does anyone know who Thomas Tallis is? Do you actually, mate?
Yeah, same as a child choir boy.
Well, you can do it as an adult as well, mate. All right. Yeah. It's not weird. Where did you sing? Round here? Which church?
Peter St. Paul.
Big up St. Peter St. Paul. Did you sing If You Love Me?
Do you want to come up here and be instead of him? Want... service?
Yeah. But yeah, Thomas Tallis, all my friends growing up, they loved, to be fair, I loved, music of, Cooler Shaker and Oasis and the like. But also at the same time, I had, quite a hefty CD collection of Thomas Tallis and William Byrd and Henry Purcell. And then people would come round and, hastily have to, change the CD player because they'd be like, what the fuck is he playing? And it's like, it's Thomas Tallis, who is one of the greatest composers.
What one of his will I have heard?
I'm going to say... probably none.
Okay.
But he was essentially the backbone of composing, which this bit isn't going to be funny.
It's the first time we've talked about Thomas Tallis in this podcast. I can guarantee that.
Get
in 12 years.
Have you spoke about Songs of Praise before? Have any of your guests been on Songs of Praise?
It might have come up.
Okay,
I can't guarantee that it hasn't come up.
But Thomas Tallis, he was around in, let's just say, the 1500s, because that's, I think, when it was. And he composed a piece for 40 voices. Okay, 40 voices. Didn't have electrics. Didn't have a computer. Just did it with candlelight and a pen.
Yeah.
That's it. No, but if you get your head around that, you try writing, an essay without... a laptop or even a typewriter. He wrote a piece for 40 voices with no electricity. Why are you quiet? I don't get... Do you not get what I'm saying? Do you know what electricity is? Have you heard of light? I know it's dark in here. But he had no light.
Yeah.
He didn't even have a pen. He had a quill or the like. Yeah. But I'm obsessed with him, and him and William Byrd were the backbone of basically English music. And then people like Vaughan Williams, who I'm sure you've all heard of, and he's probably been mentioned in the podcast.
I've had him on.
You what? I got really excited then. I got starstruck. I went to the National Portrait Gallery's reopened recently, and I went back there and I saw him. I was like, oh, God, I had a selfie with him because I'm a virgin. No, I'm not, 26. Vaughan Williams wrote a piece called Fantasia on a Theme by Thomas Tallis. He's absolutely been an influence, and he's the reason most music is what it sounds like today. But obviously, there's been obviously different iterations and evolutions since then. This is back to my university days. I quite enjoy it.
It's very interesting. I've seen you talk about this on TV, but a fact about every cathedral in the country?
So I'm obsessed with cathedrals, because Grimsby didn't have a cathedral, we had a church. And so I remember the first time I went to a cathedral, St Mary's Cathedral in Edinburgh, I lost my tiny mind. It was so big. The biggest thing I'd ever been to was Meadowhall, which is actually like a cathedral. It was modelled on St Paul's, apparently. I'm not sure if my mate was having me at leg there. But that was the biggest thing I'd ever been to, Meadowhall, which, there's no restaurants in St Mary's Cathedral. It's just a God venue. But I was just mesmerised by it. And then I was like, Mum, what are these things? She's like, are they called cathedrals? And then she bought me a Ladybird book of cathedrals. I then became obsessed with cathedrals. We then went and sang at more cathedrals around the country. And I'm just wondering, has anyone said the word cathedrals as many times as I have in a previous podcast? Cathedrals.
Not in the first 10 minutes.
Not in the first 10 minutes. Nish, last 20. Yes, definitely. So then I just became obsessed with cathedrals. And then I was in the choir, we used to go and tour cathedrals, and I kind of didn't take it upon myself to learn a fact about every cathedral, but it's just something that happens, and now I've got this a superpower where if you name any English Anglican cathedral, I can tell you a fact about it. Yes, because Nottingham only has a Catholic, and I don't touch Catholics, which is ironic, seems like they touch choir boys all the anyway, so a little bit of fun, isn't it? It's not.
I can tell you a fact.
What I meant is the joke was a little bit of fun. How I've turned quite a somber. Anyway.
I can tell you a fact about Nottingham Cathedral.
Oh, come on.
It's named after St. Barnabas.
Yes.
Does that, would that count as a fact for you?
I mean, also as well, I, the phrase, you know, the word fact, I mean, I really kind of like test that. Truro, most westerly. I mean, that shouldn't be a fact, but it is. And then some of them have got interesting stuff about them, like, oh, Sheffield's the lowest. Like, who's going to search that? Who's going to test me during a gig when I'm doing that bit of material? And it is material. but what I quite like, St. Edmundsbury yeah. is a cathedral. And do you know where it is?
Bury St. Edmunds.
There you go. Absolutely nailed it. So it's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it?
It is.
Where they basically, this cathedral was called St. Edmundsbury, and it was just knocking about in essentially a wood. And then they were like, oh, what should we call this town / city? And they said, oh, let's call it Bury St. Edmunds. And I urge you not to Google that. Okay? Because I might have just made that up.
Well, good. I'm glad. Do you know a fact about Winchester? Is Winchester an Anglican cathedral?
Yeah, Winchester. Yeah, most are Anglican. Yeah. Winchester's the longest of any cathedral. And Winchester and St. Albans used to be in competition with each other to see who could be the longest, because it was like, oh, shit, they're the longest. Fuck! Knock the end down. Build it again. And so if you go to St. Albans, you can see where, like, two or three times they've just extended it. You know what I mean? Like, if your neighbour gets, a conservatory, like, right, Jeanette's got a bigger conservatory. We're going to build another one. So Winchester is the longest cathedral. Also, it floods the most.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's got
the bone chests in it of all the kings of England.
I was just about to get to that.
Okay.
and it's got an Anthony Gormley sculpture in the crypt, which is where it floods the most. And a diver, whose name I don't know, he basically saved a cathedral once by going underwater and pulling the plug.
I mean, I'd just say leave the plug out if it floods a lot. Don't have the plug in, just leave the plug out and then let the water go out.
Can we edit that out?
Yeah. Yep. Could do that. I was at St. Albans Cathedral last weekend.
St. Paul's Cathedral?
St. Albans Cathedral.
Oh, St. Albans, yeah.
And it's made largely out of the Roman walls from St. Albans. They were taken down and you can see, if you look at it, you can see it.
Yeah.
You've got me very interested in cathedrals.
I honestly love cathedrals. There's a bloke that that has gone around, and he's in the Guinness Book of World Records because he's licked the most amount of cathedrals. Have you seen that? I thought I was weird. I said, he's licking them, so I'm going to have sex with them all.
Yeah. How much does he have to... Does he just have to lick a bit, or does he have to lick the whole thing?
Oh, no, I think... Yeah, I'm enjoying myself. yeah, I just got excited about that. I read an article, and I think it is just he has to go there, lick a part of the cathedral exterior for, 5 seconds, and then he could just crack on with his day. And I just thought, what? Like, that is brilliant.
Yeah.
I'd love to do that. I think there's about seven cathedrals that I haven't visited in England.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm thinking about doing a cathedral tour on my next one of my comedy tours. I want to do a stadium tour, but just the function rooms. That's the plan, because I just think it'd be quite a good idea, wouldn't it? The stadium tour, massive asterisk, you know, the buffet rooms.
Yeah.
And then I want to do a cathedral tour, but they're really big, aren't they? And I just don't have the popularity for that yet.
Well, but you know so much about cathedrals, you might bring in a different audience.
I know, but the audience that I will be bringing in, that'll be, no offence, God Squad. Yeah. And I'm telling
people
stories.
People who lick cathedrals,
they are welcome.
Yeah.
They'll be in the VIP bit, do you know what I mean? The lounge. But I'll just be telling stories about I had sex with someone from Beeston. And they'll be like, oh, I don't think this is what we signed up for. And there'll be refunds and no one will enjoy it. And at least I'll be forgiven, though, from the big guy.
Yeah. That's nice.
Thank you.
Well, look, you have done some other stuff other than choral singing.
It is mainly choral singing. It's mainly choral singing.
It's been good. How did you... What took you from the choir into being a stand-up comedian, which I presume was how you started this?
It was you.
It was me.
No, it was...
It often is. I am a big influence on the younger...
I love the way you went, oh, another one. Not another bloke that loves me. I've always been like a knobhead and grew up in a very working class family in Grimsby, and was brought up by my mum and my two aunties, who are hilarious, like so funny. But you just never knew that comedy was a thing that you could do. Like, it was always... I remember reading Lee Mack's book, and he said there were just special people on the TV, and that's exactly
what I thought of. Like, I just saw, you know, men behaving badly, or even like birds of a feather. I mean, I'm classing that as a comedy, and it is a comedy. Joe Brand, French and Saunders, Lee Evans, like Eddie Izzard, you'd see all these people on TV, like, oh my God, they're amazing, have I got an issue? But it just wasn't a possibility to do it at all. And then I started singing and just always wanted to be a clown of some description, but again, just never knew what the outlet would be. I remember going to Leeds Festival in 2002 and went into the comedy tent, again, not knowing that a comedy tent was a thing, and seeing Sean Locke, and we'd seen like bits of him on TV, but there was about eight lads, and we were actually in a pooing competition at the time to see who could last the longest without pooing, and it was between four of us. So I sat down, you know, to help the poo, and we just couldn't believe what we were seeing, like in front of our eyes, like live comedy. And I just always remembered that. And then I moved to London. I got a job in London. I moved to London to be a proper singer, a opera singer. And then just didn't really fancy it, to be fair. And then I remember going to a comedy club, Fim Fig Bar in East London, which is now Backyard Comedy Club.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And Lee Hurst was emceeing. And fucking hell, Jesus Christ. And opening the show was Milton Jones. That's a joke. That is a joke. But he does think it's flat. So there was Milton Jones. In the middle was Stefano Paolini. Yeah. And closing the show was Mickey Flanagan. And neither Mickey or Milton had been on TV at the time. So it was just a normal club gig in 2005 or 2006. And I lost my mind. I was like, there's 200 people in this room. And I just couldn't. Everyone had an absolute storm. Everyone absolutely ripped it. And I was just like, looking around, like, what are these secret rooms? Like, and they didn't have comedy in Grimsby. Well, Ken Dodd, I think, did the Memorial Hall, but that was before my time because I'm 18. And so I just truly lost my mind that this was a thing, and spoke to Lee Hurst afterwards. And I was like, look, how did you get into it? And he made me join this special club, which I won't get into now. But. So he basically said, oh, look, you know, this is a pro night, but you can go and see comedy in various different guises. Entirely, if you think this is small, go and look in little rooms above pubs and stuff. So I did, and he gave me the contact for, like, the Comedy Cafe downstairs at the King's Head Crouch End. And so I basically, for about 2 years, just went and watched a load of comedy, including one of your shows at Leicester Square Theatre, where me and my sister went. And I want to say Christ on a Bike.
Yeah, it probably was Christ.
What year was that?
Well, that was 2002 and 2001 and 2010 or something like that.
Right, so it might have been the 10,
because
that was the year that I started doing it, 10, 11. And so, I just went and just like kind of consumed so much comedy, because I did a gig and the compare was truly horrific. And but it was like one of my first ever gigs, and I was like, oh, what's the secret to comedy? It was like, gig. When you think to gig some fucking more, all right? And then just walked off. And he's still going, and he's still gigging. He's still shit. So I don't know if he adheres to that. But from then on in, I was like, right, this is what I want to do. And then had a bit of stagecraft from singing. So like I was still like doing solo singing in like big cathedrals and stuff. So had that kind of element of certain stagecraft. But then, and also as well, like when I sang, I was a countertenor, which is basically a male alto. So I would sing like a woman would sing.
Okay.
So quite high. So Jimmy Somerville, he like kind of like the Bee Gees, that kind of like highness. And people would laugh at me when I was singing. So I was like, well, I'm halfway there anyway. Because I've always been like a big boy, like with a big barrel chest. And then I'd be up like, now that the sun hath veiled its light. I can see all my best friends just pissing themselves in the church. You don't need to clap. And you haven't. But we can put that in on the, we can put that in the edit, can't we? Yeah. Clapping, yeah.
We'll have a clap.
And so I'd already, that's patronising. That's during the second section, mate. So then I was always, oh well, I don't mind having the piss taken out of me, and so then it just started all from there, really. But I still keep singing because I can't live without the singing, because it's just something that I've always loved doing, and I think I'd be lost without singing, which is really wanky to say in a microphone.
Do you sort of lie awake at night wishing you got the Gio Campari gig?
It's a tough one, that, isn't it?
Because I don't know when he started. When did he start? He's been going
quite a while. Like, you do sell your soul, but then also you do buy four houses.
Yeah.
He's fucking loaded. He's really... Wyn Evans.
Yeah.
Really good singer. And, like, within the musical world, it was one of those things. I think sometimes if people go and do something like that, they're seen to be selling out. But with him, people are like, well, he's a brilliant singer, so it's absolutely fine. And it's quite funny, though, because he will go and do concerts. I'm not sure if you've ever met him or spoken to him, but I've got friends who know him quite well. And he'll go and do concerts, and people have got no idea that it's him because he doesn't have a fucking 3-foot moustache. And he'll wear, like, a suit that's not the same kind of suit. But then he's like, I got away with it again. But he's a brilliant singer. But those kind of things, like, you know, there's not much money in singing at all. Like, I've got a lot of my friends still sing, and there's not a lot of money in it. And that's kind of what one of the reasons why I didn't want to do it, because you go through all this training. And I think choral music and opera are the two art forms that it's so incredible, so much training, and there's so little room for manoeuvre, and the money is diabolical. Whereas what we do, there is so much room for manoeuvre, and it's not skilled. You know, it is just a lunatic from Grimsby talking into a microphone, and you get paid infinitely more. Not infinitely more, do you know what I mean? You know, but
that would be infinity. Yeah. Paid infinity.
But, you know, you get paid a lot more than that. And so it's just, I think it's quite sad that, you know, like the singers at the Royal, Coronation, they, you know, they're not paid, like, loads and loads and loads, but they're the best singers in the world, without a shadow of a doubt. And it does get me a little bit sad. And when I become Prime Minister, I will rectify that.
Okay. Obviously, football's your other love, and that has... the singing and the football have overlapped. You sang God Save the King.
Yeah.
In the big gig, the Grimsby versus Gillingham League 2 match, just after the coronation, was it?
Just after the death of the late Queen Elizabeth, and so I'm kind of pally with the people that run Grimsby, and it's a lovely community club, and everyone knows each other. And I was trying to do this campaign a few years back to sing the national anthem before an England game at the Euros, and they said fuck off, because what annoys me is that when you go and watch an England game, it is usually a singer that has no real love for football, and they just sing it and then they're off, or they're in the corporate thing, and I'm like, mate, get me in my normal clothes singing the national anthem, getting really fucking riled up. I also want to teach the players how to sing the national anthem, because that's something that they're not taught, which I think is an absolutely insane thing. Like, if you get, and most of the footballers, I think the stat was like only one footballer in the last England squad had been privately educated, and the rest had been through the state. And it's insane. So much money is put into a footballer to get them to where they are through club level, and then into the international level, and then they go, let's just say it's the first time they've ever represented their country, and they go, whoa, biggest game of your life. I mean, millions of people watching around the world. Oh, just before you start playing, do you mind just singing a song on camera? Is that okay? And they're like, what? So, yeah. And how far away will the camera be? Oh, about a foot, if that's all right. And what happens if I don't sing? Oh, if you don't sing, everyone thinks you hate the Queen and God. Okay, so good luck with that. The Daily Mail will be on your fucking back. So I think it's an insane thing that footballers aren't taught how to sing the national anthem, whereas you look at rugby, most of them come through a private school route, and, you know, they sing the national anthem every, I think it's 45 minutes in public schools. So I wanted to teach the footballers how to sing the national anthem. I also think, and this is not what I'm here for, but I think that the national anthem needs to change as well. I think that's, and I think I'd like to help that. I know a lot of people here might love God and love the monarch, but also a lot of people don't, and I just think, especially when you look at an England team, when that lineup is a very mixed bag of people from a huge walk of society, and then you go in, a lot of people don't believe in the monarch, and a lot of people aren't Christian, so why would they want to sing this? Whereas other national anthems are all about, like, killing other nations. I was like, well, let's talk about killing the Scots. Let's sing about strangling the Welsh, do you know what I mean? Let's stab the French. I mean, if it gets us going. So I think we need to change it to be a bit more patriotic about our, you know, like PCSOs. Let's sing about them. things that make England, you know, Paddy McGuinness.
Yeah. Were you... When you were singing God Save the King...
That was the question, wasn't it? Yeah, okay.
When it was the first time you did it, and it was very... And even now... Yeah. I still say send her victorious in the middle. Were you worried about getting the?
I got it wrong. Really got it wrong. So Grimsby Town asked me to sing. So obviously the Queen passed away, and they said, look, the EFL directive, the English Football League directive, is that we have to have the national anthem, whether that's with a band or with a person singing, or even just an instrumental. But would you like to do it? I was like, be touched. And it was like, you know. I don't believe in God, and but I do believe in the monarchy.
That has to stay in, because
I sing at royal places, and I'll just get sacked, and I just can't afford to, even if it is £45 a service. Anyway, so I was like, yeah, you know, and it was a very emotional, you know, a very emotional moment. But in the rehearsals, I kept singing Queen, and they were like, Kev, the MC for Grimsby Town, like, he was like, yeah. Can you sing King? Is that all right? I was like, I know it's King, Kev. I was like, but it's like if someone says to you, oh, do you mind just changing the words to Happy Birthday? Well, I've been singing this for 40 years. Obviously, I'm going to fuck it up for the first couple. So in the rehearsal, I did sing Queen twice. And then I've got an amazing photo, which is on my Instagram. You don't have to go and look at it, at Lloyd Griffith. But basically, Kev had written on his clipboard, King, in massive, just there. He was just there. And now to sing the national anthem, Lloyd Griffith. And he was just there, and then he's turned his team sheet over and just had the word King. And I was there going, God save our gracious King. But then weirdly, I got scouted. Someone saw that. And so then on the Sunday, so that was on the Tuesday, Grimsby Gillingham, which, I mean, you we're all still thinking about that game to this day, aren't we? One all, yes, please. And then on the Sunday, I was asked to do it for Arsenal versus Brentford on Sky Sports. And I was like, fucking yes. This is great. Do you know what I mean? And I'm due to my footballing things, I used to host Soccer AM, friends with quite a few footballers and stuff. So it was quite nice. And they were all lovely. Going, hey, mate, you know, have a good one. Yeah, a good look and all that lot. And I was like, great. And I was like, oh, this is my moment. Do you know what I mean? I always wanted to be a footballer, but I was too fat. So I was like, this is the next best thing. So I'm there. Do you know what I mean? It was more like Somber Sunday. And I was there. And then, like, the cameras were over. And then what happened was the Brentford and Arsenal backroom staff just joined forces and, like, held arms with each other, just blocked the camera. You can't fucking see it's me. I'm like, what the f-? So there's one camera from the top of the stadium that gets me for about 7 seconds, but nobody knows it's me. And the only footage that there is of me was Piers Morgan on fucking Instagram. And I was like, that is not what you want, is it? He was like, oh, what an absolutely lovely touching moment. I was like, I wish I hadn't fucking done it now. So it was lovely. But the first time I ever sang at a football match was when I was 16 years old. My voice had just broke. Well, no, my voice had broken years before that. But I was singing at Blundell. My choir, St. James Grimsby Parish Church, Biggie Bad Self Mandem represent, they said, look, we'd love for the choir to come and sing on Easter Monday before Grimsby Town versus Sheffield Wednesday. Come and sing some songs to get the crowd warmed up. And I was like, let me tell you what doesn't get a crowd warmed up. And that is a choir of 16 boys singing hymns. And everyone was like, nah, it'd be great. I was like, I don't want to do it. And I ended up doing it. And then, long story short, we got to the final one. So there's three famous chants at Grimsby. It's, we only sing when we're fishing, sing when we're fishing. We've replaced the word winning with fishing. And we piss on your fish. Yes, we do. Yes, we do. And then the other one, which is just a... fish. And that goes on for 7 minutes. Anyway, we were... that is generally our channel. That goes on for about 7 minutes. And we were really getting into, we only sing when we're fishing, in four-part choral harmony. We looked absolutely mental. And then I was like, oh, my God, the crowd are joining in. The crowd are joining in. We are doing what we've been employed. We're not employed to do, but we've been, you know, we're rousing the crowd. And then I realised, oh, they're not singing the same. What are they singing? And they were singing, who's the fat prick in the green? And...
Spoiler alert, the fabric in the green was me. And I went round, I basically got changed, went round to the back of the pontoon where I was standing with my two best mates, and they were like mortified white. And I was like, oh God, that was awful. Oh God, mate, we're so sorry. I was like, oh, don't worry about it. Do you know what I mean? It's absolutely fine. No, we're sorry. We started it as a bit of a joke. And it just got out of hand. I was like, you absolute bastards. So that was like my first foray into singing on the pitch. And then I was like, oh, never again. But then obviously, you know, when the changing of the monarch, I was like, yeah. And I did it again when it was for the coronation. So yeah, it's been quite nice. And it's kind of like that is my Venn diagram of choral singing and football, which again, not many people really want. So I'll quite happily take that. Songs of Praise, football special.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
It's terrific. Look, I want to talk to you as well about all the acting you've been doing, because I've seen you in a couple of things recently that are terrific, which obviously Ted Lasso is an amazing...
Yeah, actor. I play an overweight reporter called Lloyd.
Yep.
I've got range.
You're in a lot of episodes, you know. The lovely thing about Ted Lasso, there's a lot of characters, but they all get a little chance to...
Yeah.
To make their mark, I think, and you know, it's.
And you're allowed to.
Yeah.
Like, that was the thing. Like, the reason I'm called Lloyd is because Jason one day was like, "Hey guys, do you want names?" We're like, well, "Yes, please. That'd be great for my career as opposed to reporter number two." He's like, "Right, what do you want to be called?" We're like, "Well, I'm not entirely sure." And then he's like, "Can we just call you Lloyd?" I was like, "Yeah, that's fine." And then I told my agent, like, "Oh my God, I've got a name in Ted Lasso." He's like, "What is it?" I was like, "Lloyd, you fucking idiot. Never use a real name." I was like, "Why?" "Well, if you want to write your own series on Apple, you won't be able to be called Lloyd." I was like, "I think we're fine. I think, like, I'm not Brett Goldstein. We're good." So, yeah, you were just allowed to improvise on that and kind of like come up with your own little bits and bobs and quirks and stuff. And it was a really weird one as well, because Ted Lasso isn't such an amazing series. And no one really knew how it was going to go at the start. And I wasn't supposed to be in it. I was on Soccer AM on Sky Sports every Saturday morning, which I really loved. But I did get a lot of abuse, and it did affect me. And not to get too deep, but it's changed me who I was, because the amount of shit that I got on a Saturday morning and a Sunday morning when the repeats were was horrific, and I hated it. But I loved the show, and I loved the people that were very nice about it. But you got this horrible kind of like cluster of football fans, and it's sadly growing as well with social media, that just are very opinionated and will just say anything, and it doesn't matter. Like the day I got it, the tweet that I remember, and it's pretty horrible, it said, "I would rather send my children on holiday with the McCanns than watch this fat prick for the next 2 hours." And I read that, and I was in Heathrow Airport going back up to the Edinburgh Fringe, and I cried my eyes out. I was like, this is fucking awful. But then I thought, actually, that is the safest holiday they're ever going to go on. Do you know what I mean? That is not happening again, is it? That might have to get cut. Anyway, so...
I mean, it's... to be fair, it says more about them that they should be reported to social services.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, I'd rather... Really? You'd
rather... Where are your kids? Oh, I've sent them to the McCanns. You what? But the tweet, I remember like reading that and genuinely getting tears in my eyes in Heathrow and being like, this is absolutely awful.
Yeah.
So when an opportunity came up for another job, and it was a big job, and I'm still not really allowed to talk about it, but I got offered a lead role in a Hollywood film. And it was very much like, what? I was like, yes, I'll take this. And then I took it and signed the contract and was going out to America, was having like wig fittings, costume fittings, and word was getting out. And, you know, like Tim Key was going, oh my God, you're attached to this. I'm going to go for it. I was like, great, this is amazing. And then 7 weeks later, it went and it was soul destroying. And then, you know, just that, that element of rejection. And this job.
Was just the whole film went or the
No,
part?
No, no. So there were two parts. I was playing, there was two of us. That basically got replaced, and the director just changed his mind. Nice. He had a dream, apparently. The director was Martin Luther King. So me and this other actor, and this other actor is a huge Hollywood name, like, and I was like, well, he'll be fine, but, you know, I've got to go to Barnard Castle now, before it was famous. And that was where I was going. I was on the, with Tom Rosenthal and I were doing two previews in Barnard Castle, and I was like going, I'm going out to Barnard Castle, but I don't need to do a preview. Like, I'm going to be a Hollywood star. This is going to be amazing. And then I cried on the M1. There's been a lot of crying in this so far, hasn't there? Basically, my agent called me. She's like, look, I'm really sorry this is gone. I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? And she's like, look, but I've got this meeting in. They want to see you for this other job. Because, again, word got round that I was in this Hollywood thing. And then Ted Lasso were like, look, can we see you for this? So I went along and did it. And it was one of the most amazing things in the world, because it was, as a step into filming, it was just the perfect job. Everyone is so lovely. If you've ever seen Ted Lasso, it's a very heartfelt, warm show. That's exactly what it was like when you're on set. And I'm not sure if you've spoken to Brett or Nick or Elliot.
Not since I talked to Brett before. Yeah. But yeah, Nick has always been too busy to come on, but we will get him on soon.
Yeah, and that's why you've got me, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
But
he's not coming to Nottingham.
Well, you never know.
No offence, but... I mean, I'm barely on board with being here.
I love Nottingham, by the way. I came to Nottingham a lot during... I snogged a 64-year-old lady in Rock City when I was 19, okay? And she didn't look 64, honestly. She looked 78. And I was fuming. No, I love Nottingham, but yeah, he won't be coming here anytime soon. No, I think he probably will do on his tour anyway. Yes. So, it was just lovely, and I'm obviously a very small part in it, like 14 episodes reoccurring, and it's just the nicest people. Every single person on there was just so lovely, and I just wanted to be in it every episode. So I was just texting Brett, being like, I think Lloyd should be in it a bit more, if I'm honest. And then Brett would take the piss and be like, I think about me and you having a fighting scene outside, tops off. I was like, yes, please. Get the script through. I was like, all right, I'm just asking one question. Nice one, thank you. But yeah, it was amazing. And then during COVID, when they sorted out all the insurance, we were filming during COVID, so a lady came and swabbed my nose 3 times a week in order for that to, you know, filming to happen. And it was a bit of a kind of a lifesaver, really, because it was the only thing that I was really doing apart from gigs online, which we all know were horrific. But yeah, so I absolutely loved it, and I really hope it comes back. If it hasn't, you know, I don't know if it has stopped. Shit. But it's lovely. Maybe a spin-off. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, you know, it's such a lovely. I mean, I guess it's sort of because it almost. It came out and no one really noticed, and then it seemed to get a sort of second wind.
Yeah.
And I think maybe lockdown sort of helped it, right?
Because
we needed something.
I think so, yeah. And also I think like the fact that it was on Apple TV, not many people had Apple TV or knew what Apple TV was. And there was a comedian made a snide remark when I was filming. It was like, mate, who's going to watch Apple TV? Like, what is it? It's an app on your phone. And I was like, no, it's an app on your TV. And then it became popular. It has little bursts. Like, I'm getting a lot more people in Grimsby, for example. And I think mainly because they've got the illegal sticks that you plug into the back of your TV, which I do not condone. You can't hear a wink on a podcast,
can you?
Can't
see a wink. No. You are being filmed, though, so somewhere.
Are we actually?
Yeah.
Where?
I don't know. There's a camera somewhere.
Oh, fuck. I've had loads of winks so far. I've got my knob out.
We're all together. That's going to be how we advertise.
Oh, shit. She was 75, though. Anyway, what was I saying? I can't remember. Wink.
You're getting recognised.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, no, but is it not me recognised, but as in, like, more people are watching it. Yeah, yeah. So it's just one of those things, I think, where, you know, just as people... But in America, it's huge. Like, yeah. It is absolutely huge. I think, like, Brett and Hannah can't walk down the street. Like, it's Beatlemania.
Yeah.
Well, I went to Vegas a few months back and LA, and honestly, walking down the road, I was fine. Yeah, it was really fine. It was hot, but I was absolutely fine.
You were also in Nolly about Noel Gordon.
Yeah.
With Helena Bonham Carter.
Yeah.
You were playing Benny from Crossroads.
I was playing Benny from Crossroads. Yeah. I don't know why you're laughing. So I was playing Paul Henry, yeah. who obviously played Benny from Crossroads. And that came about, weirdly, because I was in It's a Sin in a scene, like, yeah. Two tiny little scenes. And then Peter Hall and Russell T Davies got in touch and were like, would you like to read for this role of Benny? And obviously it was all confidential at the time, but I spoke to my mum because she's older than me. And
is she as old as the lady you kissed in the...
Oh, no, she's younger than that.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Yeah, no, she's from Grimsby, so she's 12 years older than me.
Okay.
Keep that in. She'll love that. So she was like, I was obviously aware of Crossroads, but I wasn't aware of, you know, just how big it was, you know, when it first came out. It was massive. And, you know, when you mention Crossroads, that one of the first characters that people do mention is you know, Benny and then Miss Diane and then probably, you know, Noel Gordon.
Yeah.
It was a dream to work with an amazing cast and crew, including Helena Bonham Carter, to work with Russell T Davies again, who is unbelievable. It was so funny as well, going from working on Ted Lasso, where it's very improvised and you can throw in a few things here and there, then to go and working on Russell T Davies, and it's like you don't change a syllable. And it was amazing. I loved it because you really had to learn your lines. You had to do your job, basically, is what I'm saying. you had to do your job. So just to work on that was great. And also interesting as well, because you're playing two characters. You're playing a man who played a man.
Yes.
And the man that he played, you know, effectively was one of the first people on TV to be portrayed with having special needs.
Yeah.
So there had to be like a level of sensitivity with that because, you know, you know, you didn't want the Daily Mail to pick up on it. But yeah, that was great. And because I think Crossroads was quite pioneering. I think they're the first person in a wheelchair as well.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
But yes, that was great. So that was filmed last year or so. And
yeah.
I've got Helena Bonham Carter's number in my phone, which I do mention on many dates that I go on. God, you're not the only Helena I know. Bonham Carter. And then they usually leave. But yeah.
Let's ask you some emergency questions.
Oh, go on.
I'm going to ask you for a question from Would You Rather, available in the foyer after the show. And it's going to be random. So let's see. And say that, I'm going to choose slightly. Okay, I don't know what this one is. Let's have a look what it is. Would you rather have to work as a living scarecrow every day for 10 years or to be used as a human crash test dummy once a year for the next decade?
See... The outfits that the crash test dummies wear are quite cool,
yeah.
Aren't they? Do you know what I mean? It's like you're in Crystal Maze.
It's not the first thing I would think about being a crash test.
Right.
Yes, they do. Yeah, they are. Yeah. I mean, I don't think their outfits so much as just that's what they are.
Well, they are. They're like... You know,
yeah.
And then you get the little stickers on your face as well.
You do,
that'd
yeah.
be quite cool. And I guess as well, if I'm trying to really be analytical about it, like, what car am I in?
Yeah, I saw a video. I don't think this can really happen. They were shown what happens
pole.
At 30 miles an hour if a lorry drives into the back of your car and your car's against a wall.
Yeah.
And most of them just disappear completely. Yeah. It's true.
But Scarecrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Scarecrow, if that's all right.
So it's only 10 days' work as the crash test dummy, and it's...
every day of the life of the next 10 years.
Every day for 10 years.
I'd love to retire.
Yeah.
Like, I've got...
Would you love to be a scarecrow, though? I think if you were out in there as a scarecrow every day for 10 years, I mean, it doesn't even specify not 24 hours as well. A scarecrow is there for 24 hours. Mm. I think you would die. I think you'd die quicker than you would as a crash test dummy, because you'd be out in the cold, you'd be wearing like a sort of tramp outfit with straw in your sleeves.
I don't think it's a tramp outfit. I think it's a farmer's outfit. I think that is what a scarecrow outfit is. It's a okay. It's a farmer's outfit, yeah. But it's because it's been out so long,
yeah,
it looks trampified. Yeah. But I think...
I don't think they dress them for warmth, is what I'm saying.
I'd commit to the scarecrow okay. bit. And what I'd probably do is kill myself.
Yeah.
5 days in.
It's good you do 5 days.
What?
You'd give it 5 days, though. I'd do 5 days of hard work and then.
Well, yeah, if you refer back to my previous story at Leeds Festival, I've held a poo in for 4 days. And I think on the fifth, I'd be like, I need to poo, so
okay.
I'll die.
All right. 1001 emergency questions. I don't even need to look it up. If you were put in a human centipede by a mad scientist, but he let you choose, you're in the middle, he lets you choose who goes at either end.
Yeah.
Who would you like in front of you and who would you like behind you?
Finally. In front?
Yeah.
Peter Schmeichel.
Okay. Any reason for that?
Hero.
Okay.
Hero of mine.
Yeah.
And I'd give him a good time.
Yeah.
He'll remember me. And then behind me, Peter Mandelson.
Okay. It's a good choice.
Mm. Peter's.
Yeah, it's a Peter-based one. Never forget. Time is always rushing by. I wanted to talk to you about Can You Beat the Bookies, which sounds like a great show. I think John Robbins was involved in this show. Right?
I hosted a show or co-authored a show, presented a show. I did a show called Can You Beat the Bookies, where basically BBC gave me a set amount of money and said, let's see if we can beat the bookies. But essentially, it was an expose on how bookies clamp down on people that have any kind of iota of an edge. And an edge is a bit of insider information or some trading. And it was really eye-opening. And the reason why I was chosen for it was because I was cheap. But also, I'd fronted a Ladbrokes campaign about 7 years beforehand when I just started doing comedy, and I just wanted to do comedy. I didn't realize that when you do comedy, people go, oh, will you go and audition for this, or will you do a voiceover for this? So these are all like things that just came like offshoots of comedy, and one of them was, oh, will you go for this ad? And I was like, yeah, sure. And it was a Ladbrokes ad, and it was £40,000 that I got paid, and that was more than I'd ever been paid for anything ever. And it enabled me to go to Edinburgh for 2 years, and John Robbins properly kicked off at me about it.
Right.
And, was calling me on the phone and was like, you're a piece of shit. I hope you die. I hope your family die. He didn't. But that would be funny, wouldn't it, if that got out. If there's any reporters in tonight, write that down. And so he said, like, you know, I think what you've done is morally wrong. And I was like, I'm really sorry. And we chatted about it. And I spoke, we had a very sensible conversation about it. And he explained why he thought it was wrong. And I explained why I didn't think it was wrong. And I'm not saying I was in the right, but I don't really have an addictive personality apart from food. And so I've never really seen anyone in my family have any gambling issues. I've seen people, with drinking problems and stuff, but I've never seen anyone with gambling. So I've just never been, probably quite naively, just hadn't been aware that it was such a bad thing to do, really. And it was me as just an actor, not as Lloyd Griffith. It was just like a little fat bloke representing many fat blokes that go into the bookies every Saturday, and that's what they wanted. And so when I did this documentary, I was kind of like very mindful of that, and it was really heartbreaking, like speaking to so many families who have just been broken by gambling, and it's shit. And I do regret, do you know what I mean, doing that Ladbrokes advert. And if they asked me to do it now, you know, I would say, well, put a few more zeros on it. I wouldn't. Because it was just like so many suicides and just so many, you know, just the bookies just glamorize like this fictitious group of men that go to the bookies every Saturday or on their phones, and it's not like, oh shit, I've just had to remortgage the house because I've got a really bad addiction, or I've just spent the children's Christmas present money. And it's so it was really sad, and the bookies are fuckers, like they're really awful. And yeah, there was various different edges. You know, we had this one lad that basically goes and courtsides, which was so fascinating, essentially, where he'll go and watch a tennis tournament in the middle of fucking nowhere, but you're still able to bet on it. And he would go round with hair. Your hair would be perfect for it, specifically long hair. Right. And he'd have the smallest Bluetooth that he could find, okay? And then he'd be connected to Facebook Messenger call, because that was the quickest way of speaking to someone. They would go to a tennis court and find an old umpire that didn't know how to use an iPad. And they would basically get the calls in. They would get the calls in, whether it was in or out, quicker than the umpire would put it into an iPad. And someone else would be on a laptop putting bets in. And so they go, okay, call on the server, £10. And go. Out! And it basically split second to put the bet on to get it. And we made about £3,500 right, in about 15 minutes. Right. And yeah, I mean, he's now been caught.
Because he was on TV with you,
but right, he genuinely was, yeah. He was like, he said, I'm bowing out. I don't want to do this anymore. But he's won millions of pounds back off the bookies because he had a betting problem. And just like various like people betting on Scottish reserve football, just because they've got a mate who plays for Hibs but isn't good enough to get into the first team, so we'll have like inside information. So it was fascinating. And the bookies are awful, and I think that real change needs to happen, especially when you're watching football as well, because all the shirts, I mean, they've all got bookie sponsors, yeah, on it, and the adverts, and I can't remember the exact stat, but I think if you watch an hour before football and an hour after football, the only time when you're not seeing ad sponsorship is basically when the pundits are talking at half time.
Right, yeah.
And that's mental, because there's kids just watching it and being, you know, and just being like, oh, what's this? What's that? And then, you know, they're just getting younger and younger. So there has to be some sort of reform, and I hope it happens. But yeah, it was a real eye opener.
Yeah, it's interesting to, you know, that's an interesting journey for you to go, you know, to be starting off on, yeah, advertising and then go and make some more money by doing a TV show about it. So you've won.
Well, I gave my fee to a gambling charity, which I've actually never mentioned before.
Fuck you.
I actually haven't mentioned it before. I don't, but take that out of the podcast. Fucking don't.
Look, we're going to have to wrap up pretty quickly, but sorry, not straight away. You're on tour next in 2024.
Yeah,
maybe before this podcast has gone out, but you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, if I'm honest, as long as if like half of the people bought tickets in this room, it'd be too many because the room's tiny. So you'd have to be selective. So get a spreadsheet out between all of you. So yeah, I'm on tour next year with my show Baroque and Roll, essentially talking about my 7 midlife crises that I'm going through at the moment.
Okay.
I'm having my shoulders and back lasers at the moment.
Are you?
Yeah.
Is that a midlife crisis thing? What's 100%. To worry about too much back hair?
Yeah. If I go to a swimming pool, I'm like, people are looking at my back hair. This is absolutely awful. Fuck off. People like them.
I've talked about this before. I'm 56, and I now have hair growing on my penis. Like, on my penis. Up my penis.
Up your penis.
Like, not inside, up. Like, not just around my penis.
So it's
my
like one
penis
of those
is
videos
hairy
that you watch on YouTube of, like, the roots being pulled out of a drain.
My penis is hairy.
Yeah.
So I have to, you know, either have a hairy penis or shave my penis, or do what you do, I suppose.
And you're not laughing at that, are you, mate?
you know, a hairy back is nothing. Imagine a hairy penis, like a little monkey or something. Like a little animal.
So you can get tickets from lloydgriffith.com. But yeah,
I've already got.
Do you not shave it?
I shave it, but it's still annoying. It's weird to have to shave your penis.
Yeah, true. Yeah,
and also, I can talk about it because I'm married. My wife has to fucking put up with it. If I was single, I wouldn't admit I have a hairy penis. I've only got one ball as well. I mean, I'm fucking in big trouble.
You could like bond, and she could plait it.
Yeah.
Give it a little ponytail.
But you shouldn't worry about hair.
Oh, I do worry about hair.
Okay.
Yeah. So the show is about me basically having various different midlife crises. Yeah. That, which I'll, you know.
How old are you? You're like in your 40s still, right? There.
What?
How old are you?
Are you 40? Are you joking? Are you in your 40s still? But denotes that I'm like 49. Yeah. I'm 40.
Yeah.
2 weeks ago. Oh, you're clapping, are you? Brilliant. Why don't you go and sit with him?
I mean, you're not that old, is what I'm saying.
You're 40 still. I've been so excited about coming on this podcast. I've been asking my agent for fucking years. Nothing. I changed publicist. Lloyd, I've got you a gig. Oh, yes, please. Where is it? Nottingham. Fuck off. Yes. I'd love to go there. And then it's been going well. Do you know what I mean?
You're young, is what I'm saying.
You've just said I'm 49. You've just categorically said, it's being recorded, apparently, and filmed. You've just said you're in your 40s still. That is like...
You are in your 40s still?
I am. And I will be for a long, long time. Arguably, so the longest that you can be in your 40s. I'm in my 40s for a decade.
You're not very old yet, is what I'm saying.
Because I get... Like, I genuinely thought you were going to go, you're like 30s. And I was like, here we go.
I'd seen you were 40, and I'm researching you, so I couldn't remember exactly what the number after was. I assumed high 40s.
What do you mean, you assumed high 40s? this is... this is going to be an awful journey back to Grimsby tonight. And the A46 is shot around Lincoln. Because I've got spots at the moment. I've got spots on my cheek. Don't say yes. Don't agree.
Yeah, you have, yeah.
Oh, this has been an awful ending to what should have been a bit of a fucking lovely little dream for me. So I'm getting some... I'm literally 40. Like, the closest to 40 you can get. I'm literally 40.
Still 40.
I'm still 40, yeah. And then I've got, like, spots on my... And I'm like, what? Choose what you want, mate. Do you want to lose your hair or do you want to get spots? Are you 40? Are you 14? So the show is basically this, but without that. Okay, so... If you want to come and see comedy, but without the bullying...
If you want me to come along and question him, old you are, I'm very happy.
Do you know what,
do.
Mate? You're welcome. You can come along if you're going to laugh at me having a hairy back, and I'll still be 40 when the tour happens. Yeah, because it's in March. My birthday's not until October. So, and I'm doing the metronome, which I've never done before. It's just down the road. So apparently, so I've never done that. So, because the Glee's shut down.
Oh yes, that's right. Yes,
so I'm doing the metronome. So yeah, you're lovely. Please. Please come. Please.
Well, there's lots of things I haven't... I haven't even asked you to do an impression of Sellotape. Could you do that? There you go, good.
There you go. Is that all right?
Ladies and gentlemen, please give it up for the amazing Lloyd Griffith!
Thank you.
Come back next week. See you soon. You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Lloyd Griffith. The music is by Scant Regard. You know that by now. Come on. Think, people, think. I'm indebted to my friend, Chris Evans, got that one, and Ben Evans, his son, not that one. And also to Beth Cliff, my tour manager, and George Lincoln, who records the sound. Also, everyone at the Nottingham Playhouse, what a delight it was, both the crew and the audience. Thank you so much for being there for us, everybody. This is the Sky Potato Buzz and GoFasterStripe.com production.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Thanks again for listening. Listen to another podcast. Tell your friends to listen to these podcasts. If you like them and you think your friends will like them, do spread the word. We need to get more listeners. It's going down a little bit, the downloads. I'd like to see it going back up again. And the more people who listen, the more podcasts we can make. It's a beautiful, reciprocal, symbiotic relationship. RichTaney.com/gigs for all my gigs. And GoFasterStripe.com for all your download and book needs. Thanks for listening. Bye.